Hello and welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. This week's episode is all about New Orleans. Earlier this month, I went to the Big Easy to visit friends and check out the French Quarter Festival and came back with some interviews with people that I bumped into, literally in some cases. The night before the festival started, we went to a jazz club where I ran into my first interview, a jazz pianist named Jesse McBride. You can catch Jesse McBride with his band, The Next Generation, on Wednesday night at Julius Kimbrough's Jazz Club, Prime Example, located in the heart of the 7th Ward. Jesse leads a jam session there that sometimes goes all night. Looking at his bio, I saw that he studied with saxophonist and producer Harold Batiste. He studied with Ellis Marsalis and a host of other great performer educators. McBride is also both a performer and a mentor himself, currently teaching music at Tulane University. Here's my conversation with Jesse McBride.
Can you talk about some of the teachers that you had that inspired you to want to teach?
I guess all of them. Well, the good ones anyway. Some of them aren't too good, but the really good ones, you know, my mother, my grandmother, my aunt, all teachers. My brother's now a teacher. My grandfather was a teacher and administrator. And it is exactly what I did not want to do. But somehow, I don't know, I end up teaching. You know, and then I had some really good teachers. As far as piano, that was a great, he was more of a friend to me than anything else, Charles Pinckney Reinhardt, local Houston cat, a very good friend of mine that I went to high school with, really encouraged me. His piano player named Robert Glasper. And then when I got to New Orleans, a lot of people, you know, took me under their wing. There were teachers as well. Harold Batiste, Ellis Marsalis, Alvin Batiste, Clyde Kerr Jr.
You kind of lucked out in the teacher department. I feel like you got some good ones.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? A lot of the great young musicians got those folk. And the reason New Orleans has success is because of people like that and people in their past, like their teachers. So this isn't really a new thing. That's why New Orleans has such, you know, powerful music, because people, you know, have some of the best teaching. Now, the school system is horrible, but we have some great teachers.
So you started off playing violin,
yep,
which is very different from what you're doing now. So how did you transition into jazz and piano and what?
My mother allowed me to just listen to all music, and she had exposed me and my brother to all styles of music. And when my aunt has a community music center, it's called a Community Music Center of Houston, and classical, European classical music, you know, jazz. There's a cat named Sam Dinkins who still teaches in Houston now. He was the drum instructor. And that place had a cat practicing piano in there one day. His name was Charles Reinhardt. And I was just kind of mesmerized. I was like, wow, you know. And that was the first person that I kind of started hanging with. I used to just go to, I was like a roadie. I would go to his gigs and carry his keyboard and set it up and set up the guitar amps and all that, bass amps and all that, and the drums, and go home with $20, feeling very happy. And that was my entree into the music business, a grunt.
Thank you.
That was the song Girls from Jesse McBride and the Next Generation. I'm Allie Lightfoot, and you're tuned into a special program all about my recent trip to New Orleans. The next musician I ran into was Albert Allen Beck, who plays saxophone and flute for Tank and the Bangas. This band combines R&B with hip-hop, poetry, and storytelling. They recently received national attention for winning NPR's Tiny Desk concert. They've been popular in New Orleans for quite some time, but now they're in big demand all over. Their lead singer, Tariana Tank Ball, was one of the most dynamic performers I saw at the festival. And Albert, the sax player who I talked to, was delightful. He came to teach piano lessons to my friend Julia Kumari Drabkin, and that's where I bumped into him. Some of you may remember Julia. She was a producer for KVNF's I See Change project. She now lives in New Orleans with her husband Forrest and baby boy Rowan, who you'll hear in the background here. Here's my interview with Albert Allen Beck from Tank and the Bangas.
Well, the band was started for 3 years before I joined. They started at a open mic at this place called Black Star Cafe. And then they coalesced around Tank out of that. And then I joined the band 3 years ago from Norman Spence. He had played at his church, and he brought me in. And I've been with them ever since.
How big an influence is the church on this band?
Huge. Because wrapped up in church music is, like, really good music and improvisational stuff. So, like, we borrow a lot of stuff from church songs, and then the whole notion of, like, rearranging stuff and doing band hits and stuff. A lot musically comes out of church. And then, you know, the whole religious aspect, because we're a very religious group of people. And I don't know. I think that's what people... You kind of look at, like Chance the Rapper and stuff, and people, it seems like people who were scared to be religious before are like now it's okay because it wasn't cool. It was like, oh, well, I'm a millennial. This isn't cool. I'm not supposed to be religious. I'm supposed to be like an internet atheist or whatever. But it's like, you know, I mean, it's fine to like be what you are. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge swath of the country that is still like that people just kind of seem like there was an image that was being pushed. People felt uncomfortable with. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else gets that feeling.
I think people just want to feel something.
Yeah.
And however that it gets conveyed works.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody, right? Or yourself.
Right.
And, yeah.
Tell me the process that you guys went through with NPR's Tiny Desk concert, because now suddenly it won, your video won, and just tell me a little bit about making the video and how that went down.
We did it like 2 days before the contest submission closed. Because we didn't really want to do it, but our manager, like, she pushes us. She's amazing, Tavia Osby. She pushes us to do everything and, like, keeps us together and alive. She made us do it, and we did it at this school that Tank, she goes out in the community and teaches sometimes. And so we did it at this school that she likes that had this big, colorful art classroom and this big desk. And it was, like, enough, you know, six of us in the video, so there was a big enough desk. And we just did it. Everybody showed up. They had other rehearsals to get to. Everybody was hungry. But, you know, we came up with this arrangement because we couldn't do the whole song because of the limited instrumentation. So we came up with this arrangement, and that was, like, that's, like, the coolest part. So now we've, like, added that in our lives because you're like, oh, that was cool. And so we kind of do that all the time now. And we do the arrangements we came up with NPR for live now, too.
Well, I feel like it was one of the videos that did not necessarily stand out because you were like, oh, look at that weird desk or the strange look. You know, it wasn't about that. It was about the performance. So suddenly you were introduced to a band that it was absolutely the performers and the song that were what made it so great, as opposed to like, that was cool how they played the spoons or whatever.
there was little percussion playing. I brought some instruments in jail. I think they made it a great part of the video.
Yeah.
But no, I agree with you. It was very good.
Yeah. And so you were talking about how it put the band in this place now where you guys are at a whole different level as far as demand, basically.
Immediately.
Yeah.
So, because now
I have to admit, I think a lot of us knew. We knew.
Yeah.
Like for
years. It's easy. I mean, it's like easy to be like, I knew, but it's like very different when
you're
in
New Orleans. You know.
Well, yeah. Well, you knew, but everybody was still like working other jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was in college, and I was like, You know, you don't really, it's, I don't know, the stakes were like, there's very real life stakes and you just have to deal with that.
Yeah. What's been the most surprising thing about it? Like, just as far as going from here to here, you know, that you can't see that on the radio.
I didn't know NPR was like that big. I mean, I'm a huge NPR fan, and I am astounded by the reach, because I did not know we were going to do this and like be selling out shows. Like already, like we have a tour lined up in the summer. We have like several sold out shows already. And it's like, what? That's ridiculous. The most surprising thing is that people are like waiting in line for us now. When a couple years ago, we went up to Chicago in the snowstorm and played for like 3 people. we literally have all these stories of like playing for nobody. Mm-hmm. We went to Jackson one time and this woman kind of like botched her promotion or whatever. She was going through some stuff. And there was like one woman out there, and it's crazy now that we have like a, I don't know, that we just have, we always knew we had something to give, but now that people are like receiving what we have to give, it's amazing.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You love each other. It doesn't matter what you are. You will find each other. Always.
I'm a bee. You're a tree. On a moon cloud in the sea. Where I light, where dark. Throwing pennies down the wishing well, hoping and wishing. Male monkeys just to look at me. Look how quickly I can climb a purple tree. I'm a gymnast, chemist, and dress mathematician. You should look at me. Look at me. I'm great. Thank you.
That was O Heart from Tank and the Bangas, and you're tuned into a special episode of Talkin' Music featuring interviews from my recent trip to New Orleans. I'm Allie Lightfoot. The next artist I discovered on my trip was the amazing Aurora Neeland. I saw her play with her traditional jazz band, the Royal Roses, at the Jazz Stage during French Quarter Festival. Later, and with a completely different persona, I saw her play with her rockabilly punk band, Rory Danger and the Danger Dangers. I think Offbeat magazine describes her perfectly. They say, Neeland's voice and instrumental playing is at once distinctly beautiful and fierce, inventive and traditional. Aurora Neeland and the Royal Roses play traditional jazz songs with the meaning, energy, relevance, and creativity that timeless music such as this possesses. Here's an example of that with their version of Ain't Nobody's Business.
There ain't nothing I can do, or nothing I can say, that folks won't criticize me. But I'm going to do just as I want to anyway. And I don't care if you all despise me. If I should take a notion to jump into that damn cold ocean, ain't nobody's business if I do. And if I go to church on Sunday, then shimmy down. Save my baby. Ain't no
nobody's business if I do. And now if I go to church on Sunday, then shimmy down, 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 down on Monday. Ain't nobody's business if I do.
That was Ain't Nobody's Business from Aurora Neeland and the Royal Roses, and you're tuned in to Talkin' Music, highlighting the best of my recent trip to the French Quarter Festival in New Orleans. I'm Allie Lightfoot. I caught up with Aurora Neeland after the third time I saw her play. She does a regular gig at the Maison. It's located on Frenchman, and this is the busy street where we conducted a rather noisy interview. I asked Aurora about an article she'd recently commented on her Facebook page. It all began with a Robert Glasper interview published in Do the Math, the blog of the Bad Plus pianist Ethan Iverson, where Glasper basically implied that women can't really follow jazz. Here's Aurora talking about her experiences with sexism as a female jazz musician.
I mean, I guess I would addend that it's, I don't feel that there's misogyny in the music. I feel that there's misogyny, can be misogyny in the culture that surrounds the music and the attitudes towards how the music is made.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of this music is a collective effort. And so I would say that a lot of the attitudes that come with that collective effort, and that certainly have historically come with jazz, that are more so when kind of like bebop came into the picture of like, it's a cutting contest, it's competitive. Which is not necessarily a bad thing that pushes us all as artists and as people, but the culture that kind of came around that is like very sexualized and also very gendered, which are two different things. I definitely think there's a place for like sexualization in the arts, and there's like a beautiful intersection of life and eroticism and feeling in the arts, and those are all really important to acknowledge that exists in arts and expression. But it's sort of, I do find in a lot of sort of mainstream musical culture, and certainly in mainstream jazz culture, that there is like a gendered misogyny that comes along with that. In New Orleans, I definitely have had experiences of like club owners saying like, maybe if you wore a dress more often, you'd get more gigs, or, you know, there can be the pressure to, from the outside, to sexualize the performance, which for me, it's annoying. It's more than anything. I was raised in such a way that like that message never made sense to me, and so I didn't really delve into that. For me, it has always been very much about like presenting the music, and in fact I would say I pushed back against that a little bit, of like dressing down in a lot of ways. I think I did it more when I was younger than I do now, but like really dressing down, like I'm not going to dress up to play this music. I don't want it to be anything about like my image. I don't want it to be anything about the fact that I'm a woman that's playing jazz. I want it to be just about the sound that is coming out. So for me, that's the way of sort of, that was the way of sort of like combating that. And now I think the way of combating it is more just about talking about it, and also just inviting other women to play with me when I can. But also not, I'm not really interested in being like, this is a woman project.
Right.
But rather like, this is a really badass musician who I would like to give the opportunity to come and play. I mean, I think the point where the misogyny starts actually is at a young age, that I wouldn't even like place blame on young men that are doing it, but more on a cultural, you know, it's like a patriarchal society and on a cultural thing where it's like you have young men and young teenagers that are getting together to play at an age when the genders aren't necessarily like mixing as much and young women don't have as much opportunity to get together and play, and that's where you learn how to create art in a kind of not judgmental way. You know, like every artist has to make a lot of bad art and bad music to get to where they are, and a lot of us do that when we're young teenagers or in our 20s, and it's harder to do that when you're older because you have developed a sense of judgment and aesthetics probably. So I would say like a big part of combating that is encouraging young women or finding, you know, structures to help young women access that part of themselves.
That was my interview with Aurora Neeland, and you've been tuned in to a special edition of Talkin' Music featuring artists from New Orleans. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to go out with one more song from Miss Aurora Neeland. This is Miss the Mississippi.
I'm growing tired of those big city lights. Tired of the glamour and tired of the sights. In all my dreams, I am roaming once more. Back to my home on that old river shore. I'm so sad and lonely, far away from home. I miss the Mississippi and you. My dear, days are dark and dreary. Everywhere I roam, I miss the Mississippi and you. Wandering that wide world over, feeling so sad and so nothing seems to cheer me under heaven's dome. I miss the Mississippi and